Now let's go into the book of Acts, chapter 19. We're all ready, are we? The timing back there. Got everything all going. All right. And we stopped at verse 37 last time. So let's see if we can take that up again. Read 37 to the end of the chapter if we can. You find it in Acts 19, beginning at verse 37 to the end of the chapter. Starting together at verse 37. For ye have brought hither these men, which are neither robbers of churches, nor yet blasphemers of your gods. Wherefore, if Demetrius and the craftsmen which are with him have a matter against any man, the law is open, and there are his deputies, let them implead one another. But if ye inquire anything concerning other matters, it shall be determined in a lawful assembly. For we are in danger to be called in question for this day's uproar, there being no cause whereby we may give an account of this concourse. And when he had thus spoken, he dismissed the assembly. In chapter 19, where are we? What city? Because there are three of us that are not here before. Quite Heather?
Ephesus,
all right, and that's up in Asia Minor, is it? Right there, it's a seaport, Ephesus, present-day Turkey. That's where they are. And what was the commotion here? It says in verse 37, he brought hither these men, neither robbers nor churches. What was happening in the context here of chapter 19 that we talked about the last couple of weeks? Yes, Ed?
They were saying their God was the greatest God.
Okay, they're saying their God was the greatest God. Who was the God or goddess of the Ephesus?
Diana.
Okay, Diana. And they yelled and screamed, "Greatest Diana of the Ephesians." And so they had a big uproar. Now, the man who was defending them, what was his name?
Demetrius.
Well, he was the one that was defending?
Defending who?
Paul? Oh, you're thinking defending that worship of God. He was defending the worship of Diana. That's right.
Yes.
Make myself clear. Who was defending the apostles? Who was sort of saying, well, no, let's not be too...
Alexander,
okay, that's in verse what?
33.
Verse 33. Okay, so Alexander came out, and he put forth his hand, you see, and when he said these things, what did he say they should do in verse 36? What did Alexander suggest?
To be quiet.
Be quiet, and then he defended them in what way in verse 37? Demetrius, the coppersmith, was bad, but Alexander was apparently good. How did he defend Paul and his company? Yes, sir.
Saying that they weren't robbers of churches.
Okay. That was all right. They weren't stealing anything out of churches or temples or anything else. Now, what else did they not do?
And they weren't speaking against the goddess.
They
weren't blaspheming the goddess.
That's right. Now, if I were there, I probably would speak against the goddess. I could blaspheme over. Paul apparently didn't. He was wise and so on. He just didn't stir up anymore. But it was enough to stir him up because they were ready to kill him and put him in jail. So now in verse 38... yes, go ahead.
Well, what position should we take? Should we stir up or not?
I think we should stir up. Now, I mean, within reason. I mean, the thing is, if we do not speak out against the wickedness, now, especially if we're asked a question. Now, if we're not asked a question, that'd be one thing.
Okay.
You go into the home of the Roman Catholics. Let's say they invite us to dinner or something, and they're friends of ours, not that we agree theologically. We just talk. If they ask a question of us what our belief is, then I think we can tell them. If they say, what do you think about our church? I think we can tell them. But I think just to start a conversation, you know, your groups between the Pope and so on, I think we have to be tactful and wise. A serpent's harmless of doubt. But I don't think we should back off from a battle if it's to be made. And that's the way, as far as the Scripture is concerned, we've got to stand for the Word of God and tell people. So it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Now, what did Paul do in chapter 17, however? In the Mars Hill. Remember? There were all these philosophers, so all these gods and all these deities.
Well, he expounded what the unknown God was.
All right. And so hearing him, I declare to you, talk about the Lord Jesus Christ, I'm sure. And you shouldn't worship all these vanities and so on and so forth. He went after them a little bit there more, because they were philosophers, they could take it. But here was a huge crowd, you know, milling around. It'd be just like if somebody were completely in favor of Diana of the Ephesians. 100 people gathered around, see? Just be quiet. Wait till after they're gone, out of your hair, not going to murder you, take you to prison, then talk about it. But I mean, certainly it's wise not to get yourself killed. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it, right? Any more than if you have a huge 500 people gathering for, say, this rock star, this fellow that's in trouble, you know, the fellow's got the nose and so on. Michael Jackson. In other words, if he had 500 people together, you know, all in favor, just screaming in favor, so all of a sudden you get up and blaspheme Michael Jackson, I mean, you're going to be torn apart, Ralph. In other words, certainly, am I right, Ralph? I mean, you kind of keep quiet, don't you? You know, there's certain things. Now, that doesn't make us mimics or quiet people or not. There's a time to speak out and a time, I guess, not. So I think we've got to be very wise. And so Paul apparently saw the situation, and he says he did not blaspheme their goddess. Now, did Paul believe in their goddess?
No.
He didn't believe in Diana of the Ephesians. What did they say she came from?
Jupiter.
From Jupiter. Came down from heaven, see? This is stupid, see? And he said that you ought not to believe in those gods that are made of stone and so on. So he defended them. Now in verse 38, what was the decision there in regard to Demetrius and the craftsmen? What did Alexander suggest that they do?
Take
him to court. Bring him up against them. Give the charges. Sending out a line. Go ahead. Matter against this man. The law is open. In all countries, is the law open? No. What does it mean, the law is open? Is it open in our country? Is it open in communist countries? No, it's not. What does it mean, it's open? What would that mean?
An avenue.
Right, to defend yourself and go to law, and so in a legal assembly, it should be just. All right?
Supposedly.
Used to be. It used to be. Now it's money. And so, paid judges, am I right? You got paid judges.
You got paid lawyers. Where's the law?
That's true. And of course, I realize the law, that the lawyer that's a defense attorney, he's got to defend his client, but a lot of those defense attorneys, see, some honorable defense attorneys never ask the client whether he's guilty or innocent. They will defend his right, so they have to be proved beyond a shadow of a doubt. But some of them do ask their clients. The clients say, yes, I murdered this guy, and disreputable attorneys will defend the murderer. But I'm told, I'm not a defense attorney, but I'm told by reputable ones, they will not defend those that they know to be guilty. There's certain things, there's certain stipulations. I'm not sure of the details of it, but they have certain rules of ethics. But some of them aren't so ethical. What about judges? Have they ever been known to take bribes? Judges, can they be paid off? Yeah, I think they can. Then what about people who get big time lawyers versus ones that get little baby lawyers? Which stands a better chance in court, big time or little time? They got the money, they get big time lawyers. Big time seems to be. Do you know any instances in either past history or present history that we know that there's some big time people getting big time lawyers or in the past? And they work wonders? O.J. Simpson had a huge multi million dollar attorney fee, tremendous. And he got off at least the murder charge from the criminal guy. He didn't do so well on the civil offense, they didn't find him guilty of that. Any other current ones that have lots of money?
Garrulous
doesn't come cheap, you know. And he took Michael Jackson. He took the other man now, free. He said pro bono, am I right? He took the other man, the fellow that is Peterson, who allegedly killed his wife, you know, Scott Peterson. But they're lawyers, and the biggest that they can, the most money. They can swing the thing, and they can now. But the law is open. Roman law, was it good or bad, or was it supposedly fair if it were done right? It was a law that was fairly good. Did Paul appeal to the Roman law at all? How did he appeal to Roman law?
Tommy says he's not a student of Roman law.
Not a student of Roman law, Tommy said. Well, that's an interesting comment, Tommy. Thank you for that.
there was a time, though, that when he was, whether in the centurions took him and they were put him in irons, and he said, I'm a Roman citizen, and everybody sort of getting
sort of
upset,
and then he put him in prison, and then the jailer wanted to get him free on his own goal, quietly. No. They put me in here, I want them to come and get me out. That's why he proclaimed his Roman citizenship. What else did Paul use?
I thought he wanted to talk to Caesar.
He said, I appeal to Caesar. See? That's where I was at. They wanted to send him back to Jerusalem, where those Jews, the Pharisees, would have killed him immediately. In fact, there were a certain number of men that took an oath they wouldn't eat until they'd killed him. But he said, no. You call me guilty of a Roman law? I feel she's, now there's certain decencies about Roman law, even in Romans 13, where Paul talked about law and obedience to the higher power. See, he's talking about a godly, biblical government will praise the good and go after the evil. See, that's biblical government. Now, there's a lot of government that's not real biblical government, like communist government, dictatorships. They praise the evil and they kill the good people, see. So there's a lot of things about Roman law, if it practiced fairly, that are decent laws. See what I mean? Like our country, in this country, we've got decent laws, but a lot of times they're changing the law, aren't they? So the law is open. What would a person do, a pastor, what chance would he have? Suppose we have a law in this country like they have in Canada, and one of our states, I believe, has it, and they have it overseas in Australia with Dr. Bennett,
right,
that you cannot speak against the homosexuals, can't preach against them. What if that was a law there? The law is open, and your pastor had to go before the law, but that was the law that said you couldn't do it. Now, here's a Bible that says preach it. Here's the law that says don't preach it. Would he stand much of a chance in the laws of this land if they passed a law like that? Would he stand much of a chance if the law was changed? You'd arrest him and they'd put him in jail. And so there's lots of that. But anyway, if it's good law, it's all right. You know, a lot of times, like in the chaplain court, the Navy chaplain, I wore the uniform of the United States Navy, and I obeyed all lawful orders. Lawful orders. And I emphasize that because I told you different times as I was preaching. One time, a commanding officer, Lieutenant Colonel Rouse, R-O-U-S-E, we used to have a little song, Mickey Rouse, you know, R-O-U-S-E, it's the same. I mean, this was a quiet joke, but he was quite a different individual. Anyway, he called me into his tent one time. We were in a tent camp in Okinawa. Was it Okinawa?
Yes,
it was Okinawa, because I didn't know whether it was Philippine Islands. It was Okinawa, okay. It was Colonel Rouse in Okinawa, okay. Because we had tent camps in Philippines too, but anyway, it's Okinawa, right. Called me in there, he said, Chapman, he said, I understand you're passing out these Gideon New Testaments, and on there you're stamping your name, Chaplain B.A. Waite, and the times of your services. I don't want you to do that. Government property, said, Colonel, I said, sir, I said, this is not government property. This is put out by the Gideons. It's an individual private corporation, and they're passing these out. And then he told me this, but you're government property. He told me I'm government property. Thank you, Colonel. I left this tent, and I kept distributing the New Testament. Now, I ran the possibility of his taking action against me, but there's certain things that I will obey all lawful orders given to me as a naval officer. I've got to do that, see, because I'm under the charge. But I tell you, as soon as I could, when I got out of active duty, 5 years in active duty, I resigned my commission as an officer and went back to civilian life because I knew that in the future I would have to obey not lawful orders of the USA, but lawful orders of the United Nations, pro-communist and all the other things. I did not want to do that, so I resigned the commission. As long as I'm there, I obeyed. But we have a law. That's good. We're in chapter 19, Tammy. And thank you so much. That was a gracious luncheon you had. That was a dinner. That was no luncheon. That was a dinner. Praise the Lord for that. And before I forget it.
We got it all done.
I don't know how you got it. Before I forget it, Dan, we had a conference and we feel that there should be a lot more assistance. I had a little lunch and eating from the church because it was a church function. I consulted with the one that really knows her way around as far as details. And Loretta gave me some good announcements, good advice. And she said maybe a little bit more is worth it. So I had to blame her if it's too much or too little. Oh, no, I asked her. I asked both of you because they know what it is. Part of me, Loretta, if I embarrass you, I don't embarrass you.
Very much.
Well, very much. Terrible. No, but anyhow, she had good advice, and she said, well...
I said that yesterday.
So anyhow, but there we are in the uproar that was there. There's a law in verse 1938. The law is opened, and there are deputies. What is deputy? What are deputies? Remember, there's an old cartoon years ago, Desert Dep. He's just sitting there, an old cactus, and Desert Deputy. Yeah, Tommy.
Lawkeepers,
all right. All right. What? Who deputizes people, sir?
The sheriff.
You'll be a deputy sheriff, and you put a badge on. Now, what does it mean to be deputized?
You have the power
of law. All right.
The sheriff.
Just like the sheriff, same power. See, they swear an oath that they would do that, Dan.
Yeah.
this word shows stem with the word deputation.
Similar stem, yeah, deputation. But they usually don't say it anymore. What does it mean when missionaries go out on deputation? What does that mean? They used to go out on deputation.
Pre-field ministry.
Now they say pre-field ministry. Yeah. Well, you know, higher power. What does deputation mean?
Taking their ministry to many churches.
Yeah, gain some support. That's right. And Dr. John was here, not to deputize or to be deputation, but you know, he talked to us. You know, we talked it over. I talked about who his ministry was, and I feel we can be a missionary again. He said, "Please do not continue my support," because we had his support every month, $100, and he was the pastor of the church over there, Victory Baptist Church. He resigned his ministry. He felt led of the Lord not to continue that. But he said he still has some ministry, and I said, "We'll talk about it when you come." And he came, we talked about it, and that's what we decided. But deputation, yes, ma'am.
You want to tell anything about what he told us, why he stopped?
Yes, I will tell you, yes. Just, you know, it's about the uproar here. They had an uproar in the town. I told him in the morning's preaching, I said, churches sometimes have quarrels and different things. He said, there's lots of things.
He did not know that
pastors, when they went into churches, there were any quarrels. He thought they were all Bible and Christian, everything was peaceful, there's no quarrels, no problems. Why did he find out different? And also, he said that the churches over there, fundamental Baptist churches, are more of a brethren type thing, see. In other words, you know, the Plymouth Brethren, they just have they know pastors and so on. So that was his approach, and the pastor that was his assistant, he never should have had his assistant, unfortunately. And everything was a brethren. In other words, there's no pastor as such. Well, Dr. Zhang, he assumed the pastor of that church, he was the pastor. His assistant would never call him pastor. See, over here, just Brother John, Brother this, you know, we're all brethren, don't get me wrong, but as a pastor, there should be some recognition he's the pastor of the church. But his sister wouldn't do it. See, so the big finally the sister left, and Mrs. Jung really was upset because she likes these people, and if he were to have done what scripturally he should have done, he wanted to do, the assistant pastor and his various friends and family would have to be dismissed from the church because of causing corruption, disruption, etc., etc. And she would not. She just couldn't stand that because she didn't think that's what churches were like, and. So it was a big mess. So he, rather than have anything, he just quietly left the church and other pastors there. But he still has this ministry. And but he's a good brother, and he loves the Lord, and he's strong for the... He said maybe later on he'll be the full-time pastor at another church possibly. Right now, he's thinking of being maybe an assistant pastor, associate pastor of the church where he now attends. He's going to first of all see what that pastor believes, what he stands for. It's all right so far. He may be his assistant, help and Sunday school teach, whatever, in that other ministry. For now, he's just attending this other. He's not attending his church he's pastor because he feels they're all wrong. The reason that they want to keep all brother, like the Plymouth Brethren, is that the Presbyterians and the Methodists in Korea are hierarchical, see, and they're bossy and they got big systems of hierarchy, and they don't want that. They want to not sit, but at least just to call a man a pastor. What's wrong with that? I mean, nothing wrong with that. So there's different. Yeah, huh?
He used the illustration of this Manson, because the man went to Hiles Anderson, but he has some of his former being in the Brethren Church. But he says they just said Brother Hiles. I said, Brother Hiles is a very strong leader.
Oh, yes, he's one of the strongest dictators I've ever seen in my life. He was really strong. So
Brother Hiles or Pastor Hiles?
Well, he was Pastor Hiles, brother.
A lot of people call him Brother Hiles, you know what I mean. So anyway, he was Pastor Hiles. Dr. Hiles, whatever. Yes, ma'am.
I also told him that in the Brethren Church, they say that. In the Brethren Assemblies.
Oh, yes.
And they have elders, but they have rules.
Oh, yes.
They have rules behind the scene, and they have to obey those rules.
Oh, yes. The elder assemblies are
different. They don't act like they do out in the room for the visitor, but they have rules.
Yeah, Dolly knows about the Brethren Church. She's been close by. There's different churches and you and Ralph and so on. But, and of course, I was led to the Lord by Plymouth Brethren as far as that's concerned. So I know all about it, and I, you know, what they practice is fine. But when it's a Baptist church, you know, you go differently. That's all. I mean, each church has got to govern itself by its own rules and its own beliefs. And, yeah?
Because one of those
are slightly
off the subject.
Yes.
But the church wasn't structured as a Brethren Church, it was structured as a Baptist church.
Right. Exactly.
There's nothing necessarily wrong with this. There's some benefits of a Brethren Church
right.
The way it's structured. But unless in the foreign country they have a problem with if the label is just is mislabeled or the label means something else in Korea, in the Republic of South Korea.
Right. Well, the fundamental Baptist churches are different types, and so that's good. So we'll pass on, honey. But she wanted to give me a little background so that we see for Dr. John. Deputized.
Deputized. Right. I don't understand everything.
One further comment, Dan. Go ahead.
Now, as far as when we think of a deputy, it was less than a deputation. They're representing a particular work they're going to go to.
Uh-huh.
And when we think of someone that's a deputy of a law enforcement agency, they're actually a representative of the law.
That's right. So that's a good word.
In one case, they're representing a ministry, their mission field they want to go to. In another case, they're representing the law of a country or the law of a city, the deputy.
And the nice thing about missionaries that go out of a local church, they're representing the local church. But they go out of their mission board, they're representing that board. So a lot of times that board is not necessarily always scriptural to what they do. So I prefer churches sending out missionaries themselves. That's what Dr. Benedict proves. That. He does not believe in the. He left the ABWA, Association of Baptist World Evangelism, because of that. Because there's a lot of things that are politically unsound in the way they do it. What's the definition, honey? You may not understand it, but see if you can.
And the verb ties, enticing. And then it says, in parenthesis, CA with the period 1736. Does that mean that word came in?
Circa means about 1736.
That's what CA is.
CA means circa, which Latin means about, approximately.
To appoint as deputy, to act as deputy, and then it's a deputization. Deputization.
Okay.
That's all it says. So, and then it goes on to deputy.
All right. So the law was there, and their deputies that were there before the deputies, they were once enforceable, able to act for the Roman government. And what were they supposed to do with these deputies in verse 38? Verse 38 says, what are they supposed to do with these deputies? Yes, Tom?
To
plead them. What does that plead mean?
Sue
the court, Heather? Sue them? All right. The Court of Common Pleas is the name of a certain court. And the pleadings, that means whatever goes before the judge. The defense makes pleadings and the prosecution makes pleadings, and those are different parts of law. Let them plead them. Let's go and make it before the law. And then in verse 20-39, who should determine whether the right or wrong in this question of the Diana of the Ephesians? Yes.
Heather?
Lawful assembly. So they had to meet in a lawful assembly to be determined properly what should be done. In verse 40, what was the danger? What was the downside of all this back and forth? If they continue this, what might happen? This big riot that was taking place in Ephesus.
It would escalate,
that's right. What else? What does it mean to be called in question? Have you ever been called in question by anybody?
Well, being used of starting it.
All right. And if somebody calls a question to put you to account, they wonder, what did you do? What did you say? Why did you do it? Why did you say it? Are you guilty or not guilty? And so on. They would be called into question as to maybe starting. What is an uproar?
Commotion.
All right. And is that proper to have uproars in churches?
No.
This was out in the streets, probably out somewhere in the area of Ephesus, and there was an uproar. There was a lot of people that were gathered in verse 32. Some cried one thing, some another. The assembly was confused. The more part knew not whether they were come together. They didn't even know what they were. So they would be called into a danger for this day's uproar. And was there a cause, really? Was there a Roman cause? Was there a Roman government cause? No. There's only a religious cause of these idolaters under worship Diana of the Ephesians. And that was it. We get a kind of this concourse. Where's the concourse? Yes, Tommy? Oh, excuse me. You're pointing at the idea. Where's the concourse?
An airplane language?
A meeting place. An airplane language. Where's the concourse there?
Is that what
there's a meeting place. The concourse are a group of people gathered together. But on the airport of Philadelphia,
is what we walk from plane to plane.
All right. the Concourse A, Concourse B, different concourse. I don't know why they do it. I guess that's where people gather. That's where the planes gather. It's a plane concourse. But the assembly and this group of people, they have to give an account. And now, did the assembly, these people, listen to this man, Alexander, or did they not listen? Did they keep yelling, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians"? Did they listen? Yes, they listened. What was the effect of their listening?
They left.
They left. Sometimes, can we learn things from listening? All right, we can learn things from listening. And they listened, and when he had thus spoken, notice, what's the word "thus" in there for? Is there a difference if the "thus" isn't there?
He's speaking about what he spoke about.
What he spoke about. In other words, there's a way to speak in a way to speak properly and exactly. He phrased it in such a way, there's a law that's open. He's done nothing against your God, had blasphemed when he had thus spoken. His words were taken, they were proper words, and they fitted in properly with the situation. So the assembly was dismissed, and Paul was free and his followers. Any other comments on chapter 19 before I move to 20? All right, chapter 20. Let's read the first three verses there, verse 1, 2, and 3. By the way, Dan and Tammy just came. That's Wayne Basterman right there. Dan and Tammy Waite, my son and daughter-in-law, and Anna over there, Anna Waite. And the back behind is Trish, Patricia Goodman. She just came in also. And did you meet the Barrys? I don't know.
Yes,
you did meet the Barrys. Okay.
Yes,
yeah, he just came. He's a visitor, new one. Now let's read verses 1, 2, and 3 of chapter 20. And after the uproar was ceased, Paul called unto him the disciples and embraced them and departed for to go into Macedonia. And when he had gone over those parts and had given them much exhortation, he came unto Greece, and there abode 3 months. And when the Jews laid wait for him, as he was about to sail into Syria, he purposed to return through Macedonia. All right. Again, we have the word uproar. What uproar was he referring to there?
At the concourse?
At this assembly, or the fighting about Diana of the Ephesians. Did she come down from Jupiter? Did she come out of the sky? Should we worship gods that are made of stone and metal and wood or not? And it was these... Were there any people that believed as Paul believed in Ephesus, or were they all worshippers of Diana, according to this first verse? Anybody there that believed with him? Well, it says there's some disciples there. What does a disciple mean? Disciple student, that's right. A discipline means to teach. A disciple means to make someone a learner. Mathetes is what the word for disciple is in the Greek, and mantano means to learn. So it's a learner, one that's learning. And a pupil of a teacher. That's a disciple. One who's and discipline is supposed to be a teaching, isn't it? Discipline is supposed to teach something. And Wayne used to be the athletic director over there at this Baptist Christian Faith Christian High or Bible Presbyterian Church. Did you do much teaching there over there?
Oh, yeah. The coaching was more because of a thing. Not only your coaching, but it's also disciplinary because you always see the other students doing something. Because you went from grade... let's say 7th and 8th up to senior high, mm-hmm. 12th grade. So it's like you're dealing with 12 players, but all 12 players were different mentalities.
Uh-huh.
You know,
so there are a lot of disciplinary problems there.
Yeah,
sure.
The thing you had to deal with the high school with their girlfriends, and you had to deal with his throwing balls against the people that
right.
So there's a lot of.
So they finally closed down that whole school, didn't they?
Yeah.
And you were fired and dismissed, and so you had to do other things. Well, this idea of a disciple, they had some disciples, and what did Paul do to them?
He embraced them.
Embraced them. What about embracing disciples?
I gave them a hug, I guess.
Okay. But I'm sure he was he cautious or non-cautious?
I wasn't there.
You weren't there. This idea, now, do some charismatic churches, for example, embrace different ones in their assemblies?
What?
Do they hug each other? Yes, they do, don't they? That's their practice. Yeah,
in this country, when we can see on television, they embrace. It's not a big romantic thing. It's and the men sometimes kiss their cheeks. It depends on what kind. So that's what they did there.
That was their custom and practice. So we're careful about the thing, but this is what Paul did. This was the custom.
Men with men.
Yes, correct.
But here, Paul embraced them because of the relationships. They had.
Right, exactly.
It's not like the church today. There was a love
Yes.
A brotherly love.
That right. Right. This was, that's the thing that, so we've got to be careful, you see. The climate of our United States of America today, as far as the permissiveness and everything else that goes along with embracing, the them is an italic type. He called disciples and embrace. In other words, they embrace it. In other words, he was going to be leaving them, they wanted to say goodbye. And many times, like you do to your sons or whatever, you give them a hug and embrace. But it's a Christian type of thing. It's not a sexual thing. It's not an immoral thing. Not an impure thing.
No, perverted.
It's perverted today. That's right. It was back then. So we got a different ball game today. And as I told you before, I think one time in the sermon, we were over there at Bethel Baptist Church. And one of the ladies that used to be there left and went to a charismatic church. She came back. She's kind of a pretty lady. A young lady, I don't know whether she's married or single or whatever. She said, hi, Tori, and she put out her arms and withdrew and talked. She said, you're one of those. And she was angry because I did not embrace her. I mean, it was out of play. But see, the charismatics, that's what they do, see. And there's certain things that we have to be careful of and so on. There are occasions now. We have friends, my wife and I have friends that go way back many years, and when we part, we do it. We hug each other. It's nothing. But we just, Tom, Dick, and Harry, or Jane, Susie, and Donna, it's a different situation. It's not a permissive thing any more than the dancing situation. It's a bad situation. So the thing about it is, it was a Christian, as Loretta, you mentioned, it's certainly where they were brothers, they loved one another, and the disciples were sorry to see him go. In fact, you remember, later on, we'll see in chapter 20, when they called the elders from Ephesus, from the church of Ephesians, they hugged each other, they kissed each other, and they left and departed sorrowing and crying because they'd see his face no more. And they knew he was going to go to Jerusalem, he's going to be taken to Rome and no longer there. So anyway, I just want to touch on that base because we've got to be very careful. Harmless as doves, but wise as serpents. And where did they go then after you left Ephesus? What section of the country? Yes, fine, yeah.
I hug people sometimes.
Yes, some people.
I mean, I hugged a couple people today, and I wanted to hug Pastor John, Dr. John.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I really wanted.
He's a dear man.
Yeah.
He's a dear man. Yes, he is.
I hugged her, but I, because he used to come see. We used to see him more than we saw our own children.
I know.
He would come see us.
That's right.
When he'd be in this country.
He'd come very often, very frequently. For many years, we've known him many years. And Dan?
Well, it goes back to having something, not to be redundant or anything, but. Having something in common with somebody, just
yes.
An embrace of someone that you don't have anything in common with.
Right.
Peter Paul, and the disciples he was working with, and it's something very specific and common.
Right.
And so, on a family level, yes, you have something in common. You have, as your siblings or your cousins, you have something in common.
Right.
On that level. But here in the spiritual level, there's something more in common that Paul had with these disciples.
Right.
There's nothing out of line or inappropriate, I don't think. It's
right.
It was based on what they had in common. And, it could be somewhat classified a cultural type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there are occasions in this country, in the culture of America, that this would be done as well.
Mm-hmm. So, in the era in which we live, as Ralph mentioned, it's gone sour and it's out of place. Males embracing males, sometimes it's a homosexual embrace. Females are females, sometimes a lesbian embrace. It's just, you know, when you have a male and a female, sometimes that's a heterosexual embrace. So, you can't win almost. Sometimes, unless there's a friendly, personal, understood relationship, like I hug my daughter Diane and granddaughter, I mean just different things, and my son sometimes I give him a hug when I haven't seen him for a while, but he embraced it. There was a proper relationship between Paul and his disciples. They loved him and he loved them in a Christian sense, a perfect pure sense, and so there was a friendliness. And then he departed. What section of the world did he go into next?
Went back to Macedonia.
Alright, back to Macedonia. What continent is Macedonia in? Asia. Is it?
Yeah.
What continent is Ephesus in?
Europe.
Here's Ephesus. What continent is that? Asia. What continent is Macedonia? Where's Macedonia? What color?
Green.
Green. Over here. What continent is that? Europe, isn't it? Remember Paul was at Troas and he had the vision in chapter 16? What did they say? What did the man say? Come over into Macedonia and help us.
Yes.
That was Paul's leaving of Asia, going over into Europe, and went to Philippi. And so Paul went back to Macedonia. And then verse 2, did he just go to one place in Macedonia? What would you say according to that verse 2? Did he just go to Philippi? Or? Yes, where did he? Well, but
it says,
those parts. Those parts, plural. So, what cities in Macedonia had he been in before? Had he started churches? Philippi, Thessalonica, that's right. He'd been to?
Where's Berea?
Berea's right here. So, he didn't start a church there, but he went to Berea and preached there, certainly, in Macedonia, Philippi, and all these other places. So he went to different parts. He covered the ground. Then where did he go in verse 2? Greece. Now, where would Greece be? That's in the yellow, isn't it? Here's your Greece. What cities did he preach in for there? And there did that time. Corinth was there. Here's Athens. See, so he went back down to Greece. All right, the lower peninsula there. And how long would you have thought?
Over there in Asia where Ephesus is. I always remember Mustafa told me.
Yes.
That he played in Ephesus when he was a little boy.
Yes.
And that must be near Turkey, or in Turkey.
Yes, in Turkey, because he's a Turkey.
And he
different
played in Ephesus when he was a little boy, and you know, he'd pick up all very interesting things, and now it's all fenced off.
Can't go in there because it's all, it's a
war's husband. That was fascinating.
Yes, it was fascinating. Talk about Ephesus. I used to play there. And we talk about the gospel or the letter to the Ephesians and so on. He was right there and rummaged around all the
different... And we would visit
different,
him at the restaurant.
Right. So he went to Greece, and then he just stayed there a while, did he, in verse 3? How long did he stay there? What did,
3 months.
3 months. That's a long time, isn't it? 90 days. 3 months. Now, did he have good ministry there, bad ministry, or was it mixed? How do you tell whether your ministry is good or bad? Do people necessarily tell you? No, okay. Yes, I tell you, can you count on what they say is right?
Or the collections?
Or the collection, maybe? Some people, that's true. I mean, they go to a place, especially if it's an evangelist, they've got to have certain expenses, see what he comes out with. what was Paul's ministry here? Did he have any friends? Did he have some enemies? How do you know he had enemies in verse 3?
People were laying
in
wait for
him. How do you lay in wait for people? How do you go about laying in wait? Have you ever laid in wait for someone?
Well, Wayne, is that his name?
Yeah, Wayne.
How what happened to you last night, Wayne?
Anybody lay in wait for you last night, Wayne?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, basically, they're very usually very quick if somebody does do something.
Where did they lay in wait for you?
Behind two dumpsters.
What city?
Philadelphia.
With guns?
And a couple of dumpsters, so...
Yeah, basically you're...
What happened? How could they handle you? You're so tall.
Well, like when I told the police officer after I make a report, I said, you know, I know guns because I used to be with the UNORA. So I know.
Right.
And they both had the 9mm.
Is that right?
And one guy had it right here. And I know the shell goes in, but...
Because all around the head, you would have been dead.
You would have, you know...
Ricocheted all over your brain.
Yeah, basically. And after everything was done, we went down to the police car, and they called it... They had two guys on bikes, and they made the report, and the guys were around on bikes, and then I was sitting in the back of the car, and I said, is there anything I could have done in that situation? And he says, well, if you would have tried to play a hero, he said, you'd be sitting in some trauma unit right now.
Yeah.
So it's better when something like that happens.
How many men land?
Two.
There were two of you, right?
Yeah, there were two of me, but like I said, the one guy was almost as big as I was. But
is that right?
Like one cop told me, too. He said, when somebody has a gun, that's a big equalizer.
That's a big equalizer.
Yes, it is.
So what did they steal from
you? Wallet, everything. I keep my PACO ticket in these.
PACO ticket down there.
I keep everything separate. So at least if I lose one thing, I have a way to
go. But they didn't take your insulin.
No, somebody didn't think it was that important.
Okay. It's important to you, though.
Yeah.
All right, we hope that your insulin will be up in the proper level. So,
that's laying the weight.
Yes, it is. Who was it that laid in wait for Paul, and why do you think they laid in wait for Paul?
Who was it?
What was Paul's nationality?
Jewish.
But now what happened to him? Is he still considered by God as a Jew?
He's a Christian.
He's a Christian, isn't he?
He's a Christian.
That's right.
And he was going against the Pharisees and Sadducees.
All right. Were these Jews, you think, Christian? Or not Christian? They were Christian.
They're Jews. They're probably religious people.
Well, devoutly religious. What does their devoutness say to them? As Paul's about to was before he was saved.
Tell them.
That's right. He said, I was so smitten with my religion, I wanted to kill all the Christians. He was strong in his religion, just like the Muslims. Real strong Muslims.
Yeah.
You have to kill Christians, kill Jews, kill anybody that's not a Muslim. It's a sad thing. But that's the way it is. Lay wait for him. When did they lay wait for him? What was his purpose at that time? Yes, he's just about to sail into Syria. Now, Syria, you don't have this map, I don't think, do you? Let me see, Syria. It's way up over here, I guess it'd be up in this area here, but another map. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, it wouldn't be here. It'd be over in Asia. It's way over there, yeah. Do you have
purple.
It on this map here?
See the purple.
On the edge of the map. This one here?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. The Antioch Syria. It is a little tip of Syria. Just a small amount of Syria right there. And you want to sail from Ephesus, Macedonia rather, over to Syria. And that's where Antioch of Syria is, where Paul was sent forth, wasn't he? As a missionary in chapter 13, Antioch in Syria. It's not purple on the. Okay. So he purposed to return then through Macedonia. So he was in Greece. He first of all was Ephesus. He sailed from Ephesus, I suppose, sailed over to Macedonia. And Macedonia went to Greece. And he purposed to go back through Macedonia first and then sail over there to Syria. So that was his intention. And while he was thinking about it, they jumped him. They laid him away. At least they don't know what they did to him, but they were waiting for him. It says, and let's read 4, 5, and 6 together. And there accompanied him unto Asia, Sopater of Berea, and of the Thessalonians, Aristarchus and Secundus, and Gaius of Derbe, and Timotheus, and of Asia, Tychicus and Trophimus. These going before tarried for us at Troas. And we sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread, and came unto them to Troas in 5 days. There we abode 7 days. All right, so did Paul go by himself, or did he have company? Did anybody go with him when he left? Yeah. All right, and who was all that went with him?
Sopater,
Archaeus, Secundus, Gaius. When he went into Asia, in other words, when he went over to Asia from here, the first one was what?
Sopater.
And he was where? Where did he live? Berea. Here's Berea, right here. What do you know about Berea, Ohio? Anything about Berea, Ohio?
That's where he went to school, right?
That's where he went to school, that's right. Yeah. And there's a Berea, Kentucky, too. There's a Berea College, different things. And the Bereans, you know, Mernoba, Thessalonica, and that they received the word of readiness of mind. Church could prevail over these things were so. Acts 17:11. Is that it? There's a Berean College, but your school is called Berea, is that it? Okay. That's their home school. That's what they call it. Berea and College. All right. So Sopater of Berea was a Sopater. Who else is there?
It's a long name.
Who else? The Thessalonians. Who was there from Thessalonica?
Sopater.
Well, I thought he was of Berea.
Aristarchus
and Secundus.
Yes.
And where did Gaius live?
Derbe.
That's over this place, isn't it? Derbe.
This is the Derbe trying to listen to it.
Derby's right there.
Is that it? Yes. Derby, right there. Okay. So that's Derby.
No,
not
the Kentucky Derby.
No.
A little different Derby.
Was
it? So, yes,
Dan? Now, is this Gaius the same
Gaius
that John penned his
third
epistle to?
Entirely possible.
No.
Entirely possible. There's another Gaius that was a bad man, you know, against the Lord, but this was certainly Paul's accompanying friend. That's certainly possible. This is the same Gaius. 3 John verse 1 on the Gaius, the beloved friend. Yes, Trish, did you say something?
I was just reiterating what you said before, the well-beloved elder Gaius.
Yes, that 3 John 1. So that's one possibility. What else then? Where was Timotheus from?
Ephesus.
All right, and who else came with him?
Was that Timothy?
Yeah, Timotheus. Uh-huh. Timotheus is Timothy. Then who else came with him? Tychicus and who else? Trophimus. All right, where were they from? Asia. So the Asia Minor, right? Yes, that would be the Asia. So they went, and these men in verse 5, did they go after Paul, with Paul, before Paul? What was the time frame?
They went
ahead of them, and they tarried. What does tarrying mean? Tarried. They waited, right? They waited for him. Where did they wait for him?
Troas.
Right, and here's Troas right up here. So they waited for Paul as he was coming. They went on ahead of the ships. You see, they probably took a couple of ships. There were quite a few of them. So they waited in Troas. And verse 6.
Wait,
yeah. Oh, I'm sorry,
Mom. I found out about Gaius.
Okay, go ahead. Give us
there's four things. One, a Macedonian who accompanied Paul on some of his journeys. This one we're having now.
Mm-hmm.
Two, a man of Derbe who accompanied Paul on his return from Macedonia into Asia, probably to Jerusalem, Acts 20, verse 4. Three, an inhabitant of Corinth, the host of Paul, in whose house the Christians were trusted to assemble. That's Romans 16. He was baptized by Paul, 1 Corinthians 1:14. Or the person whom John's third epistle is addressed, 3 John 4. Quote, he was probably a convert of St. John, verse 4, and a layman of wealth and distinction in some city near Ephesus, A.D., chapter 90. The epistle was written for the purpose of commending to the kindness and hospitality of Gaius some Christians who were strangers in the place where he lived.
So, Dan, in answer to your question, is this the third time, man? Who knows? You got all these gases.
It's all the same man.
The same man?
Sounds like it to me.
But it says one, two, three, four.
Well, they're different mentions of them.
Different mentions. Okay.
Possible
could be the same.
All right. Move around, they,
yeah, they can move around. So, all right, that sounds reasonable.
Good question, I think.
Yeah, previous states.
You have lived in
three different states.
You have?
Yes. So, I mean,
what four states have you lived in? I know you live in the state of matrimony, but what other
states? Well, entire states, I suppose.
Okay.
Well,
state of grace.
State of grace.
Is that
Iowa, South Carolina, Florida, and New Jersey.
Good, you got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maryland, 5 states.
Oh, about 5 states. 6 states. Yeah, okay, that's good. 6 states. We got them beat, honey, or not?
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't counting.
Okay, let's not count. All right. Yeah. Well, we got a lot of space.
So I'd say all that aside.
Yes, yeah, could be all right.
He could have been.
That's right.
Paul was very mobile, wasn't he?
He was mobile.
So if Gaius here is hooked up with Paul, hooked up with John.
He may be very right, Dan. Let's put him at 3 John, verse 1.
I don't know. I don't want to get longer, but.
He's a guy. Well, that's good. He's a guy.
Andrew didn't say.
He didn't spend.
Okay, sorry. We don't have to do our other shit. It's fine.
He was probably a convert
of
St. John and
laying
the well in distinction.
Convert of John. So it's probably put him in 3 John, verse 1. That'll be the way to
I like
to
be the same man.
I do too. So he is the same man. He is the same man whether we know it or not. So in verse 6, Paul sailed. What conditions of sailing did they have in those days? Was it very easy? Did they have big ships, little ships, big boats, little tiny boats, didn't they? And they had to sail this rough sea. I'm sure it wasn't too pleasant. And as it says, we sailed away from Philippi. So Philippi was the place they first went from Troas, the man there, Philippian jailer, you know, got in jail. But from Philippi, he sailed
to Troas.
Or he went from Philippi back to Troas. He came from Troas to Philippi originally, chapter 16 of Acts, and he went back.
What missionary
journey is this? This right here would be his third, I think, honey. I think it's his third.
It's his second trip to Macedonia.
Yeah. And what missionary journey was it, Anna, where he went from Troas to Philippi? What missionary journey was that? Remember? The first. It's his first journey. From Troas to Philippi. That was his first missionary journey. Was it not? Was that the second? I guess the first one was over here around these and then went back. I guess that must have been the second missionary journey. But then this, I think, was on the third. Read away.
Well, Philippi, when that was when he was with Silas.
Yes. Paul and Silas.
The first missionary journey
was around here. Lystra and Derbe and all that.
Marcus,
that's right. Mark. So this was the second missionary journey. Went over from Asia to Europe. Second missionary journey.
Since he's returning to Macedonia, it must be his third missionary journey.
The one presently not. He's on, as Anne asked the question, third missionary journey, I would be the answer to that question. Your daddy and I agree on that. All right. So he went to, what time of year was it? What month of the year? Jewish months. First month, absolutely. What day of the month would it be?
The
table,
isn't it?
Well, I don't know, this sign, I mean, but I mean, as far as the Jewish calendar, the first month. What day? What is it?
14th.
That's close. What happened on the first month every year, the 14th day? What feast?
Passover.
All right, the Passover. And what happened on the 15th day? No, what was the feast there? Unleavened bread, you guess. That's right. And that was a 7-day feast, wasn't it? Feast of Unleavened Bread, 15th. So this was the 15th day of the first month, the days of Unleavened Bread for every 7 days. That's what was happening there. You know, and they came unto them to Troas. How long did it take to go by boat from Philippi to Troas?
5 days.
5 days. Did they have diesel engines, gasoline engines, or what?
Sail.
They had sail. No engines. So the wind had to be favorable. And so all that was done by the wind. They had to trust the wind to go. It took them 5 days to make that journey.
Tell us about sailing.
Sailing? What do you want me to tell you about sailing? It's very, very quiet. Unless you have someone in the boat with you. I won't say any more. It's peaceful. It really is peaceful.
Tacking and all that.
Tacking?
I'm going to say,